Carol. Carol.
She's what? Ready.
Push that button.
She's ready.
Pushing the button now.
The following presentation is for mature audiences only. It is not intended for children, the oversensitive, or self-righteous gas bags with sticks up their butts.
Oh, dear.
This project is extremely dangerous.
It's because I blew it out of the goddamn airlock.
Language.
You're listening to the Guardians of the
Eagle. Captain America just say language.
You should have that.
Carol the Cat.
That's
oh,
an
yeah.
And Tiffany the Technician.
Oh,
switch off in the mirror.
Oh, yeah.
If only it were true.
And now, damn right they shot first. The hosts of Guardians of the Geek.
Guardians of the Geekery, episode 90? Oh my
gosh. Oh my gosh, we're almost to 100.
They never said we'd get over 2, but here we are.
Well, that's because we had problems the first time.
Recorded, yeah.
So, we are here
with Mike Sexton,
but before we even give you a chance to relax, we're going to launch you right into the rapid-fire response round, which is going to be interesting because my mouth isn't working. I'm about to ask you a series of questions. You can answer with either a single word or short answer. If you don't answer in a certain amount of time, we'll answer for you. That typically involves the word stripper pole, so we don't
know.
Okay.
Some kind of answer.
Is this PG?
No. We swear. Right.
We swear.
Okay.
I might go somewhere you don't want me to go.
Okay.
We'll try
no fear here.
Just don't go to the bathroom with the door open. We'll be fine. Okay, what are you currently reading?
Currently reading Matthew 19:27.
All right. Would you rather be Batman if you could be Batman or somebody else?
I'd rather be Underdog.
Oh, there you go. What TV show would you recommend that everyone watch?
Man. Probably CSI.
Okay. The story of your life would make a better episode for which TV show? X-Files, Star Trek, The Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., or The Walking Dead?
The Flash, because I was known to do that more than once.
What was the last...
We'll follow up on that later.
What was the last concert you went to?
The last concert was Earth, Wind & Fire.
Finish this sentence. Please don't cancel...
My... Internet.
Do you consider yourself
That's legitimate fear.
For everyone in it.
Do you consider yourself a geek, nerd, dork, or something else?
Probably a little bit of all.
Okay. Would you rather be transported to the world of Game of Thrones or The Walking Dead?
Oh, gosh.
Game of Thrones.
What movie are you next excited to see?
You know what? I have no clue.
Stripper pole. What is your primary fandom?
Stripper pole, was that? PG?
Stripper Polarella.
It's a hard R.
What is your primary fandom? What are you a fan of? What's your passion?
Probably sports.
Okay. Who is the best sci-fi captain?
Oh, Kirk.
Kirk. All right. If you were trapped on a desert island with a tablet with a solar recharger, what would be the number one book that you would make sure was on there?
The number one book. Probably Agony and Ecstasy. It's a long read.
What musical record or album?
Oh, man. Probably have to be Springsteen's The Wild, the Innocent, and the East Street Shuffle.
There you go. And what movie would you watch over and over again on an island?
Ben-Hur.
And then what video game that you could play on a tablet?
Galaga.
There you go. Oh. All right, you have survived the rapid-fire response round. Okay, Mike Sexton.
I only stumbled on one of them.
That's awesome.
Tell us
just
who you are.
Just because I wanted the stripper pole.
You're a good man.
Tell us who you are and what the heck you're doing here.
My name's Mike Sexton. I'm with Mecklenburg County. My official title is Information and Education Coordinator.
Okay.
But I really refer to myself as a guy in the hood trying to do good.
Oh, okay.
I do a lot of education around domestic violence.
Oh, okay. So tell us an example of some of the kinds of education and information that you coordinate.
Well, I coordinate a speakers bureau that's about 125 volunteers, most of them survivors, to just get out in the community and extend a lifeline to victims. So they share their story to make it real for folks, and then I just come alongside them and try to fill in the gaps and
Can you give us some examples of the kind of survivor stories that people might hear?
There's some horrific ones. A lot of them deal with childhood abuse. I had a 65-year-old woman just last month in our training who was raped the first time at 4 years old and raped every single day until she was 7. Ugh. And the only reason her grandfather stopped is because her school teacher said, if your mom won't believe you when you tell her, I will, and we'll call the police. And she said to him, you do it today, I'm going to school tomorrow, and we're going to call the police. And he never touched her again. Wow. So she stood up for herself at 7 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Awful.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great that she could have stood up. I mean, the story's awful.
Yeah, but it's a lot of that craziness taking place. We have some that saw their moms killed when they were kids, that they weren't abused themselves, but just being exposed to it. Having to carry their sisters through a creek to get to safety while they're trying to help her mom. We've got a couple guys that were abused in their relationships and got to the place of understanding if they had retaliated, they would have been arrested themselves.
And there is a certain challenge for men who are abused to come forward because, you know, it challenges their manhood. Why? They can't defend themselves or stop it from happening, or there's a certain mental psychosis around it that really
absolutely
affects it.
Yeah, we learned when we were watching the Ninja Turtles at 6-7 years old that we're not supposed to cry.
Yeah.
Supposed to be under control. Don't ask for help. And so we got a lot of guys stuck in that.
That role.
Yeah.
And what kind of assistance can you provide for people who come to one of these information or educational sessions? What is your call to action at the end of it? That what kind of assistance or guidance can you provide them?
A lot of it is to let them know if they're in it. There's help available to them between the shelter in town with the 24-hour hotline or our services working with victims and kids and abusers. But most people, it's just trying to get them to engage in the conversation and become part of the solution. And that's the challenge with men as well. Most men don't abuse. Probably 4 out of 5 guys don't, but our silence condones the actions of that one guy that does.
Right.
Until we figure out how to help him turn it around, which he's gonna listen to guys before he's gonna listen to women, to help him understand that
that's not okay.
The way he's operating is not okay.
Yeah.
And a lot of it's just challenging critical thinking when a guy's talking about the great rack on that one at the bar, or look at the pins on that one, or I want to tap that. You know, yeah. It's just, hey,
don't
what are you
that.
Thinking?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could be my sister. Could be your sister.
Yeah.
And that's where you've got the let's talk man to man.
Yeah, and that's really, that's just designed it. Provide a safe place for guys to come together. It's in a barbecue joint, which is something men relate to.
Absolutely.
So it's just an opportunity for them to come forward and just talk it out. Yeah. I mean, it's a lot more than just domestic violence. It's talking about sexual assault. It's talking about trafficking, which is a huge issue. But a lot of it is just how we react. You know, when what happens when the dish is in the sink, man, and you're tired of washing them. Or you think your girlfriend or your wife's supposed to do that, which is the mindset a lot of guys have, is that, you know, we have these stereotypical roles that men are supposed to play and women are supposed to play, and so it's a lot of it's challenging them on that stuff.
So what's what are some things that somebody could look for to challenge themselves on whether or not they're thinking of things from the right way, or what kind of advice do you give to people about, you know, maybe reassessing how they're viewing society roles, etc.?
Well, the big thing that we want to try to help people understand is the way we react to things can get us in trouble. So if someone comes up and slaps you and knocks you off the chair, our natural instinct might be to pick up the chair and hit them over the head, right? So helping people understand that reaction is our responsibility. We can't blame it on the other person. Even if they were totally out of line and doing what they did to us initially, that when we respond, we can get ourselves in trouble and we're responsible for that action. So just helping people stop and think. You know, when guys want to go off on their wives and verbally just make them feel tiny, you know, to maybe think about stepping away and taking a walk around the block or go out and ride your, what was it, Star Wars?
Starship. Millennium Falcon or something.
Land Cruiser. Yeah.
Yeah, so just a lot of it's just stopping and thinking about what you're doing and don't get yourself in a position where you're going to react and get yourself in trouble. And we see it all the time on 77 and 85.
Oh, yeah.
Road rage is everywhere.
It's crazy.
Are there any warning signs that you feel are that people can look for, not just necessarily in their relationship, but in other people's relationships?
Yeah, that's a great question. The first thing that happens in any form of abuse is the abuser will isolate their victim. So if you got someone you're engaged with that's going out and getting involved in things with you and all of a sudden they stop, that's a pretty good indicator. If you're having a conversation with a couple and she's turning to him to ask permission to talk or the other way around, that's another good indicator. Because this is about control and power over the other. That goes up a lot where people are not allowed to make decisions for themselves. So those are a couple of good indicators. Physically, and these relationships don't all get physical, most of them are verbal abuse. Probably 90% of the abuse is verbal and emotional. But the physical signs to look for is 9,500 degree weather like we're having right now, where people are wearing turtlenecks and long sleeve shirts. Yeah. But abusers have figured it out how to do the physical abuse between the neck and the upper thigh, because they know it's covered most of the time.
And what do you recommend that you tell somebody if you do see those signs? How do you engage them and tell them to seek help or where to seek help?
Call 911 is the best thing to do. Don't try to be a hero and get yourself in trouble or you get yourself in harm's way. I've heard a lot of nightmare stories of what's happened to people when they do that. It's okay and probably a good idea to cause a distraction of some kind to get their focus off what they're doing to the victim and understand that there's people watching. But don't step in and try to be a hero for more than one case where people get caught in the middle of gunfire and get killed. But call 911 if you're afraid that they're going to find out you made the call. The police will honor you being anonymous. They'll come back around and ask you questions later, but they're not going to tell the people you made the call. And that's a big fear for a lot of people, you know, worrying about just how things are in the neighborhood and how they're going to be perceived or retaliation and that kind of thing. But
I could see that if it was a neighbor, even just a couple doors down, you'd be afraid.
Yeah,
but I mean, some people would be afraid to call, but yeah. Anonymity helps a lot. So.
Yeah. Well, the other side of that is by not getting involved, what would you rather deal with?
Yeah.
A neighbor that might be upset with you making the call?
Yeah.
Or dealing with a possible homicide and having to live with that?
Forever, yeah.
Yeah. And we've had cases where people have been beaten on the second floor of an apartment complex, and people underneath them in the first floor and above them in the third floor heard craziness going on and no one made a call.
Gosh.
And suddenly a call had to be made and they suddenly have yellow tape going up.
What if you don't actually witness abuse, but you see, you know, warning signs, and I guess to your thing of calling the police, I guess in that scenario my worry would be that say it was a husband and wife and you suspected that the wife was being abused and that you called the police, you know, randomly sort of to investigate, and you would assume that the wife would probably go, no, nothing's happening, I'm fine, and then something happened to her, kind of a thing. Is there advice you can give for that type of scenario?
Yeah, there's a couple things that come up there. One is when you hear it and that verbal abuse taking place, if you call the police and they show up and it's only been verbal abuse, there's going to be no charges and there's not going to be much they're going to be able to do at all other than maybe reprimand the abuser. Right? That's part of the problem that we're dealing with, is that the only chargeable offense that's verbally abusive is communicating a threat. So all that undermining of the spirit and making people feel like dog meat, you know, there's nothing you can do as far as the system goes. Felony-wise, the only charges that are felonies is if of firearms used, or they can prove strangulation. Everything else is a misdemeanor.
Wow.
You can drag your girlfriend down the street, and it's a misdemeanor. But you do that to your dog, it's a felony. With animal cruelty charges. So the best option is to try to reach her and have a conversation, extend her some options on where she can get the help. It takes 7 or 8 times for victims to ultimately leave. They'll leave 3 or 4 times and come back. A lot of times because they have kids in the mix, or a lot of times they're not allowed to work, so to go out and get an apartment is impossible. They have no credit.
Right.
We've had some that we've had to work with to teach them how to use an ATM machine after 35, 40 years of marriage because they were never allowed to access their own money.
Oh,
that's the kind of control you're looking at. Yeah. So giving them options, like the 24-hour hotline, the national hotline, so they can call when they're ready to get the help.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah.
Good to know. The other thing that's a real challenge is North Carolina is a mandatory reporting state when child endangerment comes into play. And if you think a child's being abused, it's your responsibility as a citizen to call. And a lot of people are afraid to do that because they think DSS comes in and tears kids out of the house and breaks families up, but that's the last thing they're going to do. Right now, there's Mecklenburg County is about 1 million people in the metropolitan area. And there's only like 550 kids that are close to that stage. So that's the last resort. But you gotta keep that in mind too, that if you think that the kids are in danger, it's your responsibility to call. And then let DSS figure it out.
What is the, what are the hotline numbers someone could call? If I understand 911 if it's...
Yeah, if it's an emergency,
And
the police, when they come out, if they see that it's lethal, like a firearm in the house, or threatened the victim or the kids, then they'll get them connected with services right away. But the national hotline, depending on where people are listening, where they can connect you with services anywhere, is 800-799-SAFE or 7233. Locally in Charlotte, the number is 704-332-2513.
Okay.
And people can get all those resources online. They can go to our Speakers Bureau website, which is DVSB, which stands for Domestic Violence Speakers Bureau. So it's dvsb.sharmac.org. And you'll see on the bottom of the page, there's links to resources. And a whole layout of what domestic violence is and signs to look for and that kind of thing.
And then the men meeting, man-to-man meeting, I guess, is the third Saturday?
Yeah, we do that the third Saturday of every month just to have some continuity. We do it at 1 o'clock and just hang out for a couple hours. And then we've got another group that it's actually broken off from that. We call 10 Good Men, where we get 10 guys, give them a four-week, four-part series on what it looks like to be an active bystander. And then at the end of that, give them the tools they need so they can go out and find 10 guys to take that message to. So 10 becomes 100, 100 becomes 1,000.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's kind of a grassroots discipleship approach almost.
Yeah.
So it's more about educating the potential abuser or the person who's the, like you said, active bystander.
Yeah.
And giving them the tools to stop it, which, you know, is such a nice flip because so many times as the victim, they're told, well, you know, you dressed that way or you said that thing or you allowed it to happen to yourself, and, you know, trying to change them where, you know, they should have never been put in that place in the first place. So
yeah, well, part of the conversation is it's interesting. There's a dynamic that happens, and it happens all over the country, is that a woman's raped. It's this conversation starts out that he raped her, all right? And then it becomes she was raped. And then it eventually turns into a place that she was dressed a particular way. So we need to circle back to what it is that he raped her. And he didn't take into consideration that no means no, regardless how far down the road they get. How much she decided to hang out and party with him and drink and everything else. That at any point, she says no.
That's
he's got to pull up, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's hard for guys to get. But that's part of the conversation too, is helping guys understand that they're responsible. And the final outcome is determined on what they decide to do. And do it in such a way that he extends some grace to them so they don't feel like they're being beat up or judged. Or. But the other side of it too, in a personal challenge that I have, is that there's a perception out there, and this is another piece of helping guys understand that they need to be part of the solution, is all men are abusers. There's people that think that.
Yeah.
And there's folks that think that all victims are women. And clearly that's not the case.
Right.
We know 1 in 4 women have dealt with it, but we also know that 1 in 7 men have dealt with abuse in a relationship at some point in their life. And like that 65-year-old woman that was raped the first time at 4 years old, there's boys and girls all over this country that are someone's taking liberties with and are walking wounded.
Yeah.
And functioning out of that bad modeling and bad behavior and carrying it into their own relationships later.
Well, I think that the most powerful and strongest thing that a person can do is actually, as a victim, be able to face what happened to them and decide whether or not that's going to determine who they are.
Yeah.
I know for myself, I was a child of abuse and didn't deal with it until I was in my 20s. Mm. I didn't come face to face with it. I blocked it out. And then, and it was a family member. I was fortunate that I had the opportunity to go back and confront that person, and that they were in a place where they knew what they had done, and they had lived in fear that I would remember.
Mm-hmm.
But I was not the only one that was their victim, and so there's that whole thing as well. But, you know, I think... once I faced that and was able to address that for myself personally and kind of work through it with people, then I found that, you know, there's a freedom. You'll never get over it. There's always going to be certain psychological things. One of the things that my abuser said to me was, don't you want to learn how to be a good wife? Don't you want to learn how to have babies? So, you know, anytime I was in a relationship that wasn't sexually successful, I felt that that was my fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so therefore, sex and love were two different things. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't matter to me who I slept with, because I didn't have to love them to sleep
right.
with them.
You didn't have to emotionally get involved.
Right, because I wasn't, you know, as a child, you're not in that position. But, you know, once I dealt with it, and faced it and came out, and you know, even if it wasn't your past, even if at 65 you're saying, hey, this happened to me when I was 4 till I was 7, and you're able to address it, once you do that, you can deal with your life differently. And I actually found myself giving myself permission to get out of an unhappy marriage, because I thought if I left it, then I would be living those words of not having been a good wife or a successful successful woman, because I wasn't having children, or I wasn't doing this, or I wasn't doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely feel like that's, you know, important for people. But equally important was that I was given the opportunity several times to be able to work with local rape crisis counseling centers and be able to participate in speak out events where, you know, a bunch of us would get together and tell our stories. And that's where, you know, I first became aware of the male side of it, you know, because the male, you know, it's just even more overwhelming as a guy who's been through abuse. I mean, it's all abuse is horrible, don't get me wrong, but that there's so many different types of victims that are out there, and certainly, you know, all of them are voices that need to be heard, and nobody should be embarrassed that they were once in that position.
Exactly. Yeah, telling your story is a huge part of the healing process.
Absolutely.
It's hard to get there, but once you do, it can be empowering. Yeah.
And it was interesting to me because, you know, at the time of the confrontation, my abuser was very apologetic. But then when I went to go do my first speaking, and because they were a family member, I said, you know, I'm telling my story. I'm not telling your story. You're responsible. You know what you did.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling my story. they at then point turned and were like, well, you probably don't even remember what happened or whatever. Because, you know, now they'd kind of assuaged their guilt and were hoping to move on.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, I still remember it vividly. Yeah. It's just that I choose not to make that what my life is about. Yeah. So,
how hard was it to get to that point of forgiveness for them and for yourself?
There are still times, you know, I mean, I've moved past it.
Yeah.
There's still times of caution. You know, there's still times where I'm, like, observant of that person when I'm around them to see how they're treating other children or other people. Because I don't want to be the person that allows to be the active bystander and not let that happen. But, you know, it wasn't about forgiving them. It was about forgiving myself and letting myself move on.
Yeah.
Because as a victim, you give yourself guilt that you don't deserve.
Yeah, that's key.
So.
That's key.
But
yeah, it is paralyzing. I know there's a number of women in our speakers bureau who have been out of their relationship 10, 15 years that still have a hard time deciding what to have for breakfast because they were never allowed to.
Right.
Yeah, it gets that paralyzing.
Yeah.
But they all, to the 125th person that's come to the speakers bureau, say that just being able to get out there and share their story and see others and hear other stories and understand they're not alone in it is huge.
Yeah.
Because that's a huge part with the isolation piece is they feel like they're the only one out there and they're told no one's going to believe them. And,
oh, well, I had female family members when they first found out were just like, well, you know, this stuff just kind of happens and kids will be kids and da-da-da. And it's like, no. Kids will be kids because nobody says anything.
Mm-hmm.
And kids, that's not being a kid.
Yeah.
That's a different conversation. So, you know, and there was an age difference enough that that person knew exactly what they were doing.
Yeah.
And they weren't a child.
Yeah.
So.
Well, accountability is a key, too. And we got to figure out how to get that right. Because right now there's, you know, we learn as parents that your kid does something wrong, right? They go out in the street in traffic. You have a pretty stern conversation with them. If they do it again, you spank them, maybe, right? But there's people doing this craziness and going into the court systems and getting a slap on the wrist and sent on their way. Some are coming back four or five times and before it's considered habitual. And to me, again, coming back to the guys, is if we don't help guys step up and be part of the solution to talk to these guys that are dealing the majority of the abuse, we can get a victim into a shelter and save them. But if he moves into another relationship, all we really do is promote another victim.
Right.
Mm. Our shelter here in Charlotte went from 29 beds to 80 beds 3.5 years ago, and within 4 months they were at capacity. And they're now averaging 117 people a night in there.
Wow.
Moms and kids and some guys. But that's the problem, is that we're not getting to the root of the issue, and that is telling guys and women that are abusing that it's wrong. And being willing to step up and maybe get in their face or challenge them and say, hey, I want to help you here, but you got to figure this out and turn it around.
Absolutely. So tell us the phone numbers one more time, as well as maybe the website.
Yeah, the national hotline is 1-800-799-SAFE or 799-7233. The local hotline in Charlotte is 704-332-2513. And October is coming up. It's Domestic Violence Awareness Month. If people want to get involved, there's some amazing events taking place. Everything from a volleyball festival to a rock concert against domestic violence to a parade of playwrights, telling their stories through the arts. And you can find those at dvam.sharmec.org. It stands for Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And there's probably 12, 14 events out there already.
Awesome.
From golf tournaments to just empowerment.
Lots of different ways to
get
involved.
That's the thing with the little ball and the stick and
right.
the grass, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Got that.
Well, Mike, thank you so much. Really appreciate you.
Well, I really appreciate you guys inviting me.
Absolutely.
Well, will you stick around with us for
It'll be fun.
It's a little bit less heavy.
Let's be geeks.
All right, hit the button, girl.
Thank you for listening to Guardians of the Geekery. For more information, go to guardiansofthegeekery.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/guardiansofthegeekery and on Twitter at CLTGOG. Music. music used by Guardians of the Geekery, Lock and Load, and A Day in the Sun by Jens Pilstofka. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International.